Hello, everybody. Dave Hodges here. I'm the host of the Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America, one enslaved mind at a time. Thank you so much for joining us. Please share this information far and wide. This is kind of akin to what we do on our what we call our HIPS series, Hiding in Plain Sight, and where we explore things like what we're going to talk about today with our guest, Timothy Alberino. And Tim's been a guest on the show many times before, and we're going to talk about the Amazon and what's there. You have pretty interesting stuff. You've also heard Doug Thornton talk a little bit about this as well too. And so this is a topic I think that deserves some attention because a lot of people don't know about this. And why is it they're hiding it, and what are they hiding it for? We're going to get into all that. We are brought to you by Noble Gold. And I'm just going to say two things to you very quickly. We're going to go down in the economy before we go back up, because this is the result of the momentum created by the Biden administration that destroyed what we have. And Trump is in the process of trying to build this back. But there's some pain ahead. And the banks can keep your money. They can keep your retirement if it's attached to the bank. Dodd-Frank 2010, that's the law. Ask a bank president and watch them squirm as they don't want to talk about it, because it's true. And so we want to send you a free information packet that will tell you how to avoid all this and how the people at Noble Gold can save your retirement. They also provide you with good investment opportunities. It's a really great organization. I've been a customer multiple times over for almost 8 years. So do you want to know more? Go to davehodgesgold.com. That's davehodgesgold.com. And the federal government requires me to tell you that anytime you deal in money or investments or anything like that, there is a risk. We agree with giving that warning, and we gladly do so. But that warning should be hung over the entrance of every bank in America, because they're in trouble. DaveHodgesGold.com. Our guest, Timothy Alberino, is no stranger to most of you if you've been following us for any time. Frequent guest at really good conferences. He's got one coming up that we're going to talk about. And we have shared some conferences together. And he has always top-notch information. And Tim, it's always really good to see you. And I know one thing's going to happen here. You're going to stretch our imagination today.
Well, likewise, my friend. It's a pleasure to be back with you.
Yeah, well, you spent some time in the Amazon, and so we'll just lead right into it. You found evidence of some things that most people would call startling. Let's start there.
I recently returned from an expedition to Peru. I was there about 4 weeks ago, and I had a couple of objectives. I'm always in Peru, as people know. I lived there for 10 years. I have lots of friends in Peru, and I'm always being drawn back. I think Peru is the most mysterious country on the face of the planet. And I think it also happens to be the place where you still have a lot of undiscovered mysteries in the jungles, in the Andes Mountains, in the desert. And Peru is unique in that it has those three very distinct terrains. You have the largest wilderness, the largest rainforest, rather, on Earth, the Amazon rainforest, and then you have the second highest mountain range, the Andes Mountains, and then you have the second driest desert on the other side of the Andes, all within the same country. And you have strewn throughout these three environments archaeological ruins. So I'm always being drawn back to Peru. And this time I had a couple of objectives. One was to go up into the high jungle and explore the so-called Capuli megaliths. A couple months ago, there's a YouTube channel that is hosted by a Peruvian fellow. The channel is called Descubriendo Lugares Impresionantes, and he published a video featuring some alleged new megaliths that if these things were real, they if these are real megaliths, they're the size of the blocks at Baalbek. And what really intrigued me is that these megaliths were discovered in the jungle, specifically in the high jungle of Peru, which is called the Andean Amazon. And I'm very familiar with this area. I lived and have a lot of experience in the general vicinity of where these alleged megaliths were discovered. And so my interest was piqued when I saw this video, and I decided to go down to Peru and investigate for myself, but also in conjunction with this investigation, I was invited by Dr. Zuniga, Dr. Roger Zuniga from the University of Ica, to come down and also, while I'm down there, examine the tridactyl mummies, the so-called alien mummies in Peru that they have. They have four specimens of these mummies. They're really desiccated bodies at the University of Ica, and the professor invited me to come down. And so I also did that while I was in Peru. And in addition to these objectives, Mike Cernovich is making a couple of documentaries, actually, and one of them features some of my story. And so they wanted me to take them into the jungle. And so to begin the whole trip, we went to Iquitos. I took Cernovich and his film crew into the Amazon, up the River Masan to a village called Gamitama, where I used to live, Gamitano rather. And that was an adventure, hanging out with Mike Cernovich. Cernovich actually accompanied me on my megalith expedition as well. So that's sort of to frame what I was doing out there. And, we can discuss any of those objectives. But yeah, I mean, we discovered some pretty amazing things out there.
Well, first thing I'm wondering, and we saw the Mayas do this, constructing a civilization or certainly a city within the confines of the jungle had to be amazingly difficult. And I've never heard a good answer on how the Mayas accomplished it. What about what you found here in Peru?
The Amazon is one of the most hostile environments on Earth, and the thing is that there have never been megaliths discovered in the Amazon, so that's an important point. This is the Andean Amazon, so this is the high jungle. This is where the Amazon rainforest meets the Andes Mountains, and so it's still jungle. You still have monkeys and jaguars and stuff in there, but you're also now getting to into the Andes Mountains, and you have some peaks that are 10,000 feet high, but also forested with jungle. And so there's stone because you have the bedrock of the Andes, so you have stone. And I've always suspected that there must be megaliths in the jungle, because there's megaliths in the Andes for sure. I mean, everyone's familiar with the megaliths in Peru. Those are in the Andes Mountains. That's where there's a stone, where there's granite, where there's limestone, where there's other kinds of stone that are readily available, and so you find megaliths. But I've always suspected there's got to be some sort of a megalithic complex in the high jungle, and so this is what really drew me to go to Capuli. Capuli is it's kind of a remote village. It's located in the district of San Martin. It's close to not far from the provincial capital of Moyobamba, and you can't drive to Capuli. You can drive to the town right before you get to Capuli, and then you have to park your vehicles. And the only way to get there is to hike up to the village, and it's about a 40-minute hike. And all of this, by the way, is documented in a video I've published on my YouTube channel. So you have to hike up to Capuli, and the first thing I noticed when I was hiking up there was that the road, the hiking trail that goes to Capuli, is not a It wasn't constructed by the villagers. That was immediately apparent to me. This road looked like an Inca road. It looked like a well-designed, well-built, and important ancient road. And I found out later that, in fact, it was. We don't know if it's the Inca who built it. It could be the Inca or the Chachapoyas people. And we could talk about them a little later because they're very important. And so that's the first thing that struck me, was this: there's an important road here, an important ancient road. And that road goes right by the Capuli megaliths. When I got to Capuli, I conversed with the owner of the property where these large rectangular blocks are located, and found out that, in fact, that the villagers believe that that road was built by the Chachapoyas people a long time ago. And so I knew that, okay, this means that there's something important, at least in the region. But it could also indicate that there's something important right there in Capuli, because those roads, anyone who knows anything about these ancient roads in Peru that are built by the Inca or important pre-Inca civilizations like the Chachapoyas, and they were also contemporary with the Inca actually subdued them and subjected them to their empire, will know that they always lead to citadels, lost cities, or huacas. And huacas are important sacred sites to the Andean people. And so that was the first clue that we were onto something interesting here. We investigated, I examined the so-called megaliths of Capuli. And for those who don't know what they are, these are large, really, really big rectangles. And I don't know what kind of stone it is. I suspect it's sandstone based on a sample that I brought home. I think it might be sandstone. And they're really impressive, huge rectangular blocks. And I examined these blocks closely, and I was able to determine that the blocks were fracturing along vertical fracture lines, vertical fissures, and they were breaking off into rectangles. And there's a lot that can be said about that, but my analysis of Ka Pali is that it's indeterminate. We don't know. It could be a megalithic quarry, but there's no evidence of tooling. It very well could be natural. So Ka Pali was interesting, but it wasn't. It wasn't definitive. It wasn't the definitive megalithic site that I was hoping that it would be. However, after visiting Ka Pali, right in the vicinity of Ka Pali, about a 10-minute drive down the road into the jungle, when you hike back down the road to Ka Pali, that path, there's a site called La Colca Cascade. And La Colca Cascade is it's a waterfall. It's a cascade. And it's not really known to outsiders, but it is a popular attraction to people from Moyobamba and people from Nueva Cajamarca, which is the nearest large town. So you'll find people there, locals, swimming in the little pools and sliding down the cascade. And this cascade is very interesting to me. I don't know if you saw pictures or video of it, but when you walk up to the cascade, it gives the impression that it's created with cut stones, but that's an illusion. It's not. It's clearly bedrock, and the bedrock is it's almost like slate where it's layered bedrock. But long story short, I believe that this cascade is engineered, that it's actually an aqueduct. I believe that layers of the bedrock were removed to create this channel, this aqueduct. They were using the natural flow of the river, and they removed layers of bedrock, and they created these pools. There's a couple of pools that were leveled out to collect the water, and there's even keys in the pools, like stones that look like they're keys to control the flow of the water. Again, all of this is in my video on YouTube, and so I believe that's an aqueduct, and it would take a tremendous effort. It would be very laborious to create that aqueduct. And so now I have two clues that there's something really important in that region in regard to like a lost city or a megalithic site. There's the potential megalithic quarry of Ka Pali. It's again indeterminate at this point, but it's a potential quarry site for large stones. And now I've got this cascade that looks to me like an aqueduct, an engineered cascade aqueduct. And the third clue came when I saw somebody sent me, a friend of mine in Peru sent me a Facebook post from an individual, from a professor, Professor Abraham Soto, who is a professor of history at the University of San Martin and in Moyobamba. And he, in this picture, he is depicted standing in front of what appears to be a megalithic wall, polygonal megalithic wall in the jungle, and he's pointing at it. And the individual who sent me this photo said, "This was just discovered a couple weeks ago. You should go look at this." And obviously, now I'm really intrigued because this looks like Cyclopean megalithic architecture.
When you say
So
cyclopean, what do you mean by that?
Cyclopean is the term. It's actually the technical archaeological term for megalithic walls that have large stones fitted together without the use of any bonding agent. So without the use of mortar or any kind of cement. And it's a very particular style, and it is the style that is representative of megalithic constructions all over the world. All megalithic edifices are built in the Cyclopean style. And Cyclopean architecture, it can be polygonal. In other words, the stones can be the stones can have many angles that are fitted together, and that's very difficult to do with large stones. Or it can be rectangular, and usually when the walls are rectangular, like at Baalbek, certainly in Peru, in many cases, when you have rectangular megalithic walls, these walls are interlocking. In other words, they fit like Legos on top of each other. So you'll have the base megalithic block, and it will actually have a protrusion, a rectangular protrusion carved into it. And then the block that sits on top of it has a rectangular indentation, right? So it sits on top of it. It connects like a Lego, basically, and it interlocks it. And they also have sometimes they also have clamps, T-shaped clamps that lock the blocks together. And those clamps are usually made of some kind of metal, sometimes even gold and silver, which makes me wonder if those clamps are have a function that's not to hold the blocks together necessarily, but to transfer an electrical current between them, or something like that, right? Or some sort of a vibrational current or something like that, right? That's
Would
what it
this be
seems to
like
me.
0 point energy?
I don't know, but it does seem interesting when you have these interlocking blocks with the clamps. It is interesting that sometimes they're gold, because that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, if you're gold, as everyone knows, isn't the strongest metal. It's a precious metal and it doesn't corrode, but you don't use it to build stuff because it's soft. So why would you use gold to hold these big megalithic blocks together? That doesn't make any sense to me. It seems to me, but you would use gold or silver to transmit a current, because gold and silver are exceptional conductors, right? So it must have a use, these clamps, like at the walls of Ollantaytambo, that go beyond just a structural. There's something else going on there. So that's the Cyclopean architecture, can be polygonal or rectangular and interlocking. This wall that was discovered by Professor Soto seemed to be polygonal, and this looked like, in the picture, in the photo, it looked like a legitimate megalith. So I was able to meet with Professor Soto the following morning. He was in Moyobamba, I was in Moyobamba. We got together, and he began to tell me something very interesting. Not only had he discovered this wall, which he believes is man-made, he told me that he has a project underway in that region. Again, this is the Andean Amazon north. This is the northeastern side of the Andes Mountains. And he and his colleagues, he's got some archaeologists, anthropologists, and some other individuals from the various universities in that region. They have a project underway in which they're trying to locate the original foundation of Moyobamba, the city of Moyobamba, which is a very important city in the jungle. It's one of the oldest cities in Peru. And they're trying to find the original foundations of Moyobamba. And what happened is they unintentionally stumbled upon something much more important than that. They discovered a corridor between the city of Moyobamba, Chachapoyas, and the lost city of Gran Pajatén. I don't know if you've ever seen images of Gran Pajatén. It's a Chachapoyas city that was found about 30 years ago or so, or maybe 50 years ago. And it is really stunning. You are not allowed to go out to Gran Pajatén without explicit permission from the government. You cannot go there. It's totally protected. It's very mysterious. And I've got some suspicions about why they don't want you going out there.
Well,
We
I'd
can
love
talk
to
about
ask you because it sounds a lot like Zayawas and prevention of inspection of the pyramid.
it. Well, these ruins, this corridor that the professors identified and his team, they believe it has to do with the ancient Chachapoyas people. Now, there's something about the Chachapoyas people that is very unique. The Chachapoyas are pre-Inca. They were pre-Inca civilization, and they were contemporary with the Inca. They're known as the Cloud Warriors because they inhabited the cloud forest of Peru and the Andean Amazon region. And they were the most indomitable culture that the Inca contended with. They were very difficult to subdue because they were tremendous warriors. The Chachapoyas people, according to the Spaniards, when the Spaniards arrived, they noticed some very interesting physiological anomalies among the Chachapoyas. Namely, they were on average taller than the rest of the natives, right? They had clear eyes. So they had blue and green eyes, many of them. They had fairer skin than the other natives, lighter skin. And many of them, even to this day, have red and blonde hair. And this was before the Spaniards arrived. So when the Spaniards arrived, when Francisco Pizarro and the conquistadors arrived in the early 1530s, when they encountered the Chachapoyas people, this is how they found them, with these physiological anomalies. So if you if you ask a historian or an anthropologist today, why do the Chachapoyas people have these anomalies, these physiological anomalies? They'll tell you because they interbred with the Spaniards. Nonsense. They had these anomalies before the Spaniards arrived. And when the Spaniards arrived, before they began to interbreed with the white man. So why? How is this? What's going on here with the Chachapoyas people? How is it that they have these physiological oddities? Well, if you dig into the culture and you talk to the Chachapoyas people, you will find that they believe, and at the very least, there are legends that indicate that they are descended from a race of red-haired giants that used to inhabit the cloud forest. And this is where they...
How much taller are they than the average person? Do you have a figure?
Today, they're not much taller. I mean, they've interbred today with all of the other populations. When the Spaniards arrived, they were approaching 6 feet tall, whereas the other natives were around four and a half feet tall, a very... very diminutive people. The Chachapoyas people were like a foot taller than the other natives. So they weren't like 7 feet tall. However, there's legends of giants and there's rumors, and I was involved directly with this. There are rumors that the cadavers, the remains of giants, red-haired giants, have been discovered in Chachapoyas and were secreted away to Lima. And I was directly involved with some years ago with this individual who contacted me and a friend of mine named Benny Humphreys in Peru. I don't even recall how we got in contact with him, but he was a archaeologist, and he told us that he knew where the bodies, that there were 8 and 9 foot tall bodies, cadavers of giants that had been extracted from the cloud forest and were secreted away to repositories in some museums in Lima. And he was going to come to we were in Tarapoto at the time, me and my friend Benny. Benny lives there. And this individual was going to come, and he was going to disclose this information to us. And furthermore, he was going to take us to see these bodies in Lima. And so he flew over to Tarapoto, and we were in communication with him throughout this whole process. He gets to Tarapoto. We go out to dinner with him. And I say to him, okay, tell us about these bodies that you discovered, these that you've seen. He didn't discover them. He saw them in a repository. Tell me about the Chachapoyan giants or the cloud forest giants that were extracted from that area. Give me more information about this. And it was the weirdest thing. He completely backtracked and played dumb about the whole thing. He pretended like he had no idea that what we were talking about. I mean, we paid for his flight to come out to Tarapoto from Lima to brief us on this. We were in communication, constantly talking to him about the giant remains, the remains of red-haired giants from Chachapoyas. He gets to Tarapoto, and when I'm sitting face-to-face with him, he is pretending like he has no idea what I'm talking about. And I'm just looking.
You think he was being watched?
Yes. Me and my friend Benny are looking at each other, just absolutely flabbergasted. Like, what is going on here? And I told the individual, but you told us that you had information about these red-haired giants. You knew where the cadavers were. You knew where the mummies were. And you have seen them and so forth. And he said, no, I never said that. He said, but if you want to go try and find some evidence of giants, I'll go with you. And we just couldn't believe it because it had been our correspondence. I speak fluent Spanish, so does Benny. Our correspondence with this individual was not confusing. It was very clear that we were interested in the 8 to 9 foot tall red-haired giants that were discovered in the cloud forest, and he claimed definitively to have knowledge and have seen these bodies, right? And now he's just pretending like he has no idea what we're talking about. So we put him on a plane the next day and sent him back to Lima because he was useless. And the only thing that we could determine was that somebody had gotten to him. Somebody had...
Yeah, the Peruvians in black were listening to the call that you guys were on, and they paid him a visit, and they said, you will go there and you'll shut this down. That's pretty obvious.
I think it's almost certainly the case because there was no logical reason for this guy to pretend that he had no idea what we were talking about. I mean,
What's the purpose for covering it up?
well, that's a very interesting question. Now, let me address that for just a minute. So, in the beginning, I thought, and a lot of my colleagues think, that the reason why they're covering up the existence of giants, both ancient and contemporary, in other words, dead and living, is because it confirms the biblical narrative. But that theory falls apart under scrutiny. That can't be the answer, because it's not just the biblical text that mentions giants. It's like all of the ancient people around the world talk about giants. And there's all kinds of different origin stories in relation to these giants. Every major ancient civilization on earth has legends of giants, not just the Bible. The biblical text is just in accordance with these other ancient documents, the ancient Sumerians, the ancient Egyptians, the ancient Greeks and Romans and so forth, the Inca, the Maya, the Aztec, the North American Indians, everywhere, the Mongolians, everywhere around the world, the ancient Chinese, they all have legends of giants. So the discovery of giants, the revelation that giants existed in the world and perhaps still exist, isn't just a confirmation of the biblical narrative. It's just a confirmation of the universal testimony of our ancient antecedents, right? So it doesn't, it's not focused on any one particular narrative. Now, is it a confirmation of the veracity of the biblical narrative? Sure. But it's not like definitive proof that the Bible is true. It's just definitive proof that all of these ancient stories and legends have truth to them. So that, again, the theory that they're hiding the bones of giants because it'll confirm the Bible, I think is mis it's it doesn't hold up under scrutiny, as I said earlier. And then you have some people who say, well, if we were to discover the existence that giants existed again in an ancient or contemporary context, then it would blow the theory of evolution out of the water, right? I don't think that's true either. I mean, what does it matter to evolutionists, to Darwinian evolutionists, if there were giants? It doesn't change. They would just say that was a different branch of evolution, right? That was a different branch of Homo sapien. It wouldn't.
Agreed.
It really doesn't threaten the evolutionary narrative. So those two explanations, are insufficient for me. There's got to be another reason, right? So what is it? What is the reason? I suspect that this has to do with more to do with the occult than it does to do with atheists and evolution. People who don't want the Bible to be given any more validity. This has to do with the occult. I believe that the giants, there's a specific purpose, that there's a function that the bodies of giants, the bodies and remains of giants, perhaps even the DNA of giants, that it supplies the occult with something essential, something they want, something they need. Now, what does that mean? Does it mean that they're using the bodies of giants in rituals? I would say, from information that I've gathered over the years, I would say that that is almost certainly true, that they're using the bodies of Nephilim in rituals. Why would they do that? Well, the reason why they would do that is because, in according to the biblical narrative and some of these other ancient testimonies, there's something very unique about dead giants. You can still communicate with them. This is part of the lore, the legend of these of the Rephaim, of this race of giants descended from the Nephilim from the pre-flood world. You can still effectuate communication, establish communication with the spirits of dead giants. And maybe having the bodies of the giants facilitates that function. And of course, the spirits of the dead giants are the unclean spirits. Those are the demons in the biblical narrative. So I think there's the occult is using the remains of dead giants to contact and to perhaps control demonic entities, demons specifically, the disembodied spirits of the Nephilim. And this, of course,
What purpose do you think?
for what purpose? Who knows? I mean, they could use it to demonize themselves, to demonize other people. They can use it perhaps to gather information. I mean, you're communicating with ancient beings. These things are very, very old, and they have a lot of knowledge. They're descended. Their fathers were the watchers, the angelic watchers. So, and also, could you use the DNA of these Nephilim to create like a superhuman species on Earth, subspecies of Homo sapien? So I think that's really where the cover up, why the cover up exists, why the remains disappear, much more than evolution or proving the veracity of the biblical narrative. There's something that's even more sinister and more mysterious. Now, I'll point you to Sardinia here to steel man this idea. Sardinia is the land of giants. I think we've discussed Sardinia before. Sardinia is unquestionably the land of giants. In Sardinia, you have to this day the tombs of the giants. That's what they're called. They're these gigantic, these huge megalithic tombs, right? And they're shaped. I used to think they were shaped in the figure of a bull's head. In the True Legend series I produced with Steve Quayle, I said that the Sardinian tombs were shaped like a bull's head because that's what it looked like, right? And I connected it to Moloch because there was a cult of Moloch on the island, and so I assumed it was a bull's head. I was wrong. The tombs are not shaped. The tombs of the giants are not shaped in the form of a bull's head. Rather, they're shaped in the form of a uterus, of a womb. And if you look at it, you pull up a picture of a uterus, and then you pull up the Sardinian, the tombs of the giants, it's the same shape. It's a uterus. And this makes perfect sense. And it should have dawned on me way back then when I was researching this. And I've been to Sardinia a few times. And the reason why it makes sense that the tombs of the giants are shaped like a uterus is because they were constructed to facilitate a rite of passage called the rite of incubation. And this is why in Sardinia you have these tombs of the giants, and they have these little, they call them false doors. There's two different kinds of tombs. They're both shaped like a uterus, but in one style, you have a trilithon doorway, which is two large megalithic stones with one on top, right? Like a traditional doorway, trilithon doorway. But the doorway is small, so you and I would have to stoop down to get into it. And then you have the other style where the doorway is a large stele. It's a large carved stone with a real small entrance, look like a doggy door, basically, right? But you could still get into it. You and I probably could not squeeze into this door, this little doggy door, but a teenager, either a preteen or a teen, could squeeze into that opening. And the reason why they have these little doorways is because the tombs were used as a rite of passage. The giants were not buried in the tombs. The remains of the giants or artifacts related to the giants were buried beneath the tombs. And the gallery, the actual tomb itself, was meant to function as an incubator. That's why it's called the rite of incubation. It's a rite of passage where a young person, a young male, probably 14, 15 years old at that time, would go into the tomb. He would be sealed into the tomb for a period of time. I don't know if they would do this individually or in groups. They would seal the young people into the tomb. And the whole purpose was for those young people, as a rite of passage, to incubate in the tomb and to establish communication with the spirits of the mighty ones who were buried beneath, of the Rephaim. And perhaps even as sort of a mechanism to demonize these young people, to increase their ferocity in battle, let's say, their prowess in battle. You demonize. Remember, the Gadarene demoniac in the Bible was so strong that he could not be bound with chains. He would break the chains. So you can imagine the utility of a warrior filled with demons. That's going to be a really difficult guy to bring down on the battlefield, right? So I think that the rite of incubation, the tombs of the giants, is the answer to why it provides us with a plausible answer as to why there's a cover-up of giants to this day, because they're still using the remains of giants in some kind of rite of incubation to demonize people, to harness the power of the spirits of these entities, again, the disembodied spirits of the giants. So that's my suspicion at this point. And that makes a lot more sense to me, why they would cover up the giants, why they would conceal the bones. It's because they're actually using them to effectuate some kind of in some kind of a ritual to effectuate some kind of result that they want, either to demonize themselves, to harness the power of demons, to communicate with these ancient beings. And I really think that that's the explanation.
Tim, I got to tell you, every time you're talking about your suspicions about the hit, why they're trying to hide it, I go back to the pyramids in Egypt. I also go, my mind goes to the Kandahar giants in Afghanistan, our troops.
That's right.
Okay. And there's a distinct effort to hide it. And right now we had that discovery under the pyramids, you know, that's done with LIDAR and radar. And no one wants to talk about it in Egypt. They're trying to cover it up. I think you're right. I think part of it is about knowledge of spirit. And I think some of it is also about technological advancement. In fact, I had a friend named Vance Davis, former NSA, attached to NATO, and he was instructed, he refused, and they ended up leaving the service over this, to take his team and to contact demonic entities for the purpose of technological advancement, like the Nazis did. And when my father worked in paperclip, he asked the Nazis, how'd you get so far ahead in theoretical physics? And they said it was aliens. And my dad, after talking to him, he concluded it wasn't aliens in the way we think of ETs. It was probably demonic entities that they were channeling through the occult. And we know the Nazis did that. I think it's all the same thing. I think it's a blanket planetary cover-up to keep this from the public and to harness whatever value is there for a small group of entities.
Well, when you think about the Nephilim, you're talking about beings who go all the way back to the days of Jared.
Yeah.
In the antediluvian world, beings who are literally thousands and thousands of years old. And they have the knowledge of their fathers, the Watchers. And the Watchers predate humanity. They pre-exist us by who knows how long. They know the secrets of heaven, the Watchers. And so this is the knowledge that the Nephilim have. And certainly you can imagine certain individuals, human beings, members of the occult, mystery school adepts, who would want to access that knowledge for an assortment of reasons.
Sure.
And not the least of which what you just mentioned, for technological advancement, for the knowledge of how to build certain kinds of technology and an understanding of the universe and physics. And are we deriving much of our scientific knowledge from, I mean, for lack of a better term, from demons, from the spirits of these Nephilim? I would say we are.
Well, Vance was told in his training, they gave a secular version of Genesis 6. Good guys and bad guys fought out in space. The bad guys came here, intermarried with women. They wanted to capture the human soul. They couldn't figure that out. Their goal was to get back at God. And so they developed transhumanism without the term being used. Vance wrote a book about that in 1988, way before transhumanism. And it was about garnering technology. In fact, when my dad actually questioned one of the Nazis, and they were always under surveillance, and he questioned one of the Nazis, he said, do you think that rather than aliens, you were dealing with demonic influences? He got called into his commanding officer's lair, and he told him, don't you ever ask that question again. So the cover, I hear what you're saying, but when you're talking about this lost city, to me, I go to other places on the planet with very similar characteristics. It's interesting. How far did you get into learning about the giants? Do you have any more details?
This individual who I met with, Professor Soto, Abraham Soto, I mentioned that they discovered this corridor between Chachapoyas, Moyobamba, and the lost city of Brahmahaten. They suspect that there's a lost city somewhere in the middle of that corridor because of the roads. And they think there's a lost city somewhere in the middle of there and in the vicinity of those mountains where the Kapoli megaliths are, where the Kolka Cascade, and where this megalithic wall was discovered. And so they've discovered roads, and they've discovered ruins that are very interesting. He told me that in this corridor, they discovered two massive stone tombs, very unusual, massive stone tombs. And when he said that to me, he kind of looked at me like, are you understanding what I'm saying here? And I said, maybe those are tombs of the red-haired giants. And he sat back and he just kind of looked at me like, we're not going to talk about that right now. But it registered with him. And he gave me a very strange look when I said that. And I said, well, are you going to open the tombs? He said, we can't open them yet because they're on private property. and the owners of the property are not cooperating with us. He said, but we have a strategy to get into them. And the alarm bells are going off in my head when he's saying this to me, because these could very well be the tombs of the red-haired giants. They must exist somewhere in Peru, tombs of the giants. All over the world, the giants are buried in mounds and in stone tombs. And so they were in the United States. They are in Sardinia, and I think they are in Peru as well. Many of these have been uncovered, and the remains of the giants, I believe, have already been extracted.
I agree with that, yes.
So, but this is an unexplored area. This is virgin, this territory in Peru. Nobody has really penetrated deep into this area. Archaeologists have not gone in there. Very, very few people have gone looking for anything in this region, right? So, anyway, to complete this story, the next day I met with Professor Soto, connected me with an individual from a village near the megalithic wall he had discovered. We hiked out into the jungle. We hiked up this ravine through a river, and we came upon this site. And I was immediately impressed, because whereas Kapolei, I don't know, it's indeterminate. You know, I'm it, it very well may be natural. This appears to be a legitimate megalithic cyclopean wall. And I think that it's a retainer wall, because it's holding back the side of the ravine. And right in front of the wall, there's a canal carved into the bedrock of the river. There's a canal carved. And again, you can see all this on my YouTube channel, in my video. There's a canal carved into the bedrock. So it seems to me that somebody had built this retainer wall, megalithic retainer wall, to keep this channel open, because it was important. This part of the river, this part of the water course, was obviously important to them. They wanted to keep it open. But the fact that it's a cyclopean megalithic retainer wall tells me that there's a larger megalithic complex somewhere out in those mountains. And in fact, we could be talking about a lost city of giants. And it has been rumored for centuries that in Peru, either in Peru, somewhere in the Peruvian Amazon, or in the Brazilian, or in the Bolivian Amazon, somewhere and close to the Andes Mountains, somewhere in this region, there's a lost city of giants. And this is precisely what the 19th century explorer Percy Fa or the early 20th century explorer Percy Fawcett was looking for. This is the lost city of Z. He didn't just believe that the lost city of Z was an important
Tell us what
ancient.
that is, the Lost City of Z.
That's right. He didn't just believe that it's an important ancient city. He believed specifically that this was a lost city of giants. And you know who told him that? One Madame Helena Blavatsky told him that directly told him that the lost city you're looking for is a lost city of giants. And it's in the Andean Amazon, and he was looking for it down in the southern Andean Amazon in the Bolivian area. I think if the lost city of Z exists, it's in the northern Andean Amazon, precisely in this corridor. And it makes sense that this is where the lost city of giants would be, because this is where the Chachapoyas culture is, with the red and blonde hair and blue eyes and taller stature, descended from this race of giants, according to their own legends. Some of them will attest to this even today. So I think what we're talking about here is the lost city of Z, and it's out there somewhere. And I think that Professor Soto and his team are getting very close. By the way, are coming very close to finding it. Professor Soto invited me to partner with them to come and be a part of their expeditions to look for this lost city, and I'm likely going to do that. I want to bring LIDAR out there, and you know, when it comes to finding the bones of giants, it's a race against the archaeologists. It's a race against time. You have to get there before the archaeologists. And I don't believe that the archaeologists go looking for the bones of giants. I think archaeologists are out there doing their work. They're just, you know, thinking they're going to discover. They're looking at the ruins of the Inca or of a pre-Inca civilization. And then suddenly, unexpectedly, they stumble upon the remains of gigantic humanoids that are 9 feet tall. And they call back to the headquarters in Lima, to the university, and say, hey, we found something interesting. And that's where the machine kicks in. That's where, you know, the so-called let's call them the archaeological men in black, show up and say, okay, nice discovery, go away, no picture, give us your pictures, give us all your data, go away, there's nothing to see here. And then they secret the bones away. They take them to who knows where. And certainly, there may be some of this in the black market as well, the black market for antiquities. So I think we could be looking at the, I mean, really, we may be looking at the lost city of Z here.
Maybe
That's what this may
this is
amount to.
pre-Adamic.
I think, well, I think that pre and post, in Peru, Cieza de León, one of the chroniclers, he was a conquistador and a chronicler. He wrote that the Indians in Peru had a legend of giants, and he wrote that they told the Spaniards that the giants who lived in the world before the flood were larger than the ones who lived in the world after the flood. So I believe that the Inca and the Chachapoyas and the Moche and the Paracas and all of the native cultures in Peru knew that there was a race of red-haired giants living contemporaneously somewhere in Peru with them. And in fact, there are some records in the chronicles of the conquest of Peru that indicate that there were giants fighting on one side or the other with the Inca or against the Inca. And when we say giants in this context, we're probably talking about 7, 8, 9 foot tall guys, not 15 plus, 7, 8, 9 foot tall guys. So, and also you mentioned the Kandahar giant. You know, Steve Quayle originally broke that story, I think on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. And then Steve and I had the opportunity to interview the pilot, the C-130 pilot, he was the source for the story. He was the whistleblower, so to speak. We sat down face to face and interviewed this individual for our film, Holocaust of Giants. And he's the one who told the story about, who broke the story about the Kandahar giant. So he's the whistleblower. And we publicized that story. And that story has just taken off. I mean, that the story of the Kandahar giant, it's become like internet legend. It's taken on a life of its own, and people are constantly adding to it and adding details, and it's sort of morphed into something almost unrecognizable today. But what people don't know is that I have personally confirmed, validated that story with several individuals, one of whom was a high-ranking, and I can't say too much about this. He was a high-ranking guy in Afghanistan. He told me face to face that the story is true, and then he told me more stories about giants that were encountered out there, and that it was known among the brass that these beings were out in the were in Afghanistan, a particular area of Afghanistan, and that when they were encountered, there was a very specific protocol of what to do with them and how to recover the remains and where those remains would go. And
Wow.
this was so I, that that story has been confirmed to me by a few different individuals who were there. One of them very, very high ranking, I have no question whatsoever that there were giants in Afghanistan back in 2003, 2005, when we were there running operations during the war, and that there are still to this day red-haired, six-fingered giants. We're talking 10 to 12 foot tall. Let's say I was told that the smallest ones were about 9 feet tall, 9 to 12 feet tall, somewhere in that range. Still today, there are tribes of giants living out there, and I think they're living under the ground.
I think you're right. I'm going to try to. This is going to seem off the wall, but you're putting me in the mind of something. I understand the need in some people's minds to hide the technology that could be garnered from these beings. But there's another legend out there right now, and it's really getting legs among some really good researchers that across the planet, there is an inordinate amount of gold being stored and guarded by supernatural beings. And at any time anyone would get close to it, that's the end of them. And they don't want to let any one nation become too powerful by finding this gold. Have you come across any legends like that that link
Yeah,
to
I
this?
have actually. Yeah. I have encountered some very bizarre stories related to treasure, gold and silver. There is something about hoards of treasure. I think this is where the dragon lore comes from, dragons that guard hoards of treasure. I think the dragon is metaphoric The story of the dragon guarding the treasure is an allegory pointing to some kind of a reality here. I do believe that large hoards of treasure, and I would not have said this 10 years ago. I would have been totally skeptical about this. I can't be skeptical that skeptical about it anymore. I do believe that large hoards of treasure, specifically gold and silver, are guarded. And you can say supernatural beings, but also I have stories where these treasures are guarded by UFOs, by flying saucers.
I've heard that. I've heard too. It's the surviving descendants of the Lemuria civilization that perished, and they all.
Yeah, but it doesn't make sense to me though. It doesn't make any sense because if the objective is not to allow human beings to accrue too much power, any particular faction to accrue too much power by discovering these hoards of treasure, then why don't the saucers or whatever, the giants or whoever they are, just take all the treasure away? Why don't they just take it and hide it somewhere else? It doesn't make sense to me.
There's one thing that makes sense to me on that. It's if they were to ever find a culture on this planet that was worthy of handling the power and wisely.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. And
And
that
that's,
connects
and I know that's a stretch, but that's one thing that makes sense to me.
to a particular story.
We
In
got
fact,
about a minute and a half.
well, there's no time to
You
tell
know,
that
we're
story.
gonna hold this because I'm gonna have you back to talk about this. This is
Yeah, that's a
fascinating. And
fascinating
Tim,
story.
I'm gonna have you back definitely to talk about this, but people are going to want to know more on this. This is really interesting. And you've got some stuff you can expose people to give them more knowledge. And you've got a conference coming up. Can you talk about those?
Yeah, I've got a members community called the El Barino Analysis. You can go to the elbarinoanalysis.com, and we're constantly talking about stuff like this. I'm telling all kinds of stories in there, doing private briefings, live streams, book club stuff. It's great. That's where I spend most of my time, the elbarinoanalysis.com. And I also have a conference coming up right here in my hometown of Bozeman, Montana. And that conference is going to be taking place from the 27th through the 28th of June. It's going to feature an array of fascinating speakers. I'm going to be one of the speakers. David Politis is going to be one of the speakers for the Missing 411 content. Congressman Eric Burleson, he's on both the UAP caucus and the committee
Wow.
that's been involved in these UAP hearings. He's actually central to the fight for disclosure in Congress. He's coming. He and I are going to be doing a session together. And as well as our friend Gary Haven is coming,
Oh,
and a handful of other great speakers. This is going to be epic. This event is going to be epic. So if you want to get tickets, it's called NEFCON, by the way. If you want to get tickets to NEFCON, you can go to elbarinoevents.com. Elbarinoevents.com.
yeah, we're going to have you on before the conference because I want to cover this last point that we hit on because it's a tale unto itself with a lot of tributaries. AlbarinoEvents.com is where people can go to find that. Okay. And interesting, I'm not surprised Gary Haven's going to be there.
Well, Gary's
I'd like to
directly
come.
connected to that story I was just about to get into. So we're
Oh,
going to
yeah.
talk about that. We're actually going to be talking about that at the conference, showing pictures, showing videos that have never been seen anywhere else except for my members community. It's telling stories that nobody has ever heard, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Gary and I have had some very interesting adventures in Peru, and I'll just give you a hint. One of them involves the Peruvian mob, the Ica mob. And so there's a lot of very crazy UFO stuff, lost treasures, elongated skulls. We're going to be getting into all of
I was
that.
going to ask you about the elongated skulls. There's not enough time to cover all this, but we are definitely going to have you back. This is fascinating stuff. Man, I hope I can clear my calendar. I'd like to come over there and cover that as a member of the
Love
media.
to have you come out here.
Yeah, I'll be in touch with you about that. Tim, hey, always great to have you on. Really, really interesting stuff. And folks, there's going to be more because you heard us leave on a cliffhanger. And I kind of think I know where Tim was going, and it's fascinating. Tim, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, anytime.